Well, there's so much more, and I could go on and on and on. Let me tell you one more quick story about Calvin the pastor, and this will probably be a little bit surprising. Many of you have heard the name Servetus. Servetus was probably one of the most notorious heretics of the 16th century. The Catholics hated him, the Protestants hated him, because he denied the deity of Christ. He'd written a number of books renouncing the deity of Christ. This was an outrageous thing. And Servetus had actually been arrested in France by Catholics, put on trial and convicted of heresy, and was sentenced to death. And the day before the sentence was to be carried out, somehow Servetus escaped. And in the most irrational decision of his life, Servetus made his way to Geneva. Now, the Protestants didn't like people who denied the deity of Christ any more than Catholics did. Calvin is in Saint-Pierre, the great cathedral there in Geneva. He's preaching away, and in walks the notorious heretic, Michael Servetus. He's recognized and immediately arrested. Now, you may have heard the name Servetus before. And one of the reasons you may have heard that name is because Calvin is often criticized. And sometimes it is said that he put Servetus to death. That's not exactly the case. What I'm going to argue, which I'm going to prove, is that far from being the person who put Servetus to death, Calvin pastored the most notorious heretic in all of Europe. He tried to win him to Christ. This is the story that you never hear. Of course, Servetus is put on trial by the Protestant authorities. And Calvin's role in the trial was principally as an expert witness. I mean, if you're trying somebody for heresy, you need a theologian, such as Calvin was, to address the question and look at the writings of Servetus. So Calvin serves essentially as an expert witness for the prosecution in this case. And he simply tells the truth, that Servetus had denied the deity of Christ, he denied the Trinity. But what people don't realize is that while Servetus was in prison during the trial, that Calvin, on a number of occasions, went to Servetus in his jail cell and tried to win him to Christ. Now, that is an extraordinary example of a pastor's heart. No one is too far from the kingdom that you, as a pastor, cannot go after. And that's what Calvin did. Now, sad to say, it was to no avail. Servetus was eventually condemned to death, not by Calvin, but by a judge in Geneva of heresy, and he was then put to death. And the day that the sentence was carried out, Calvin tried yet again to go down and to share the gospel and persuade Servetus to recant. And again, he failed. And here's a big surprise in all of this. Calvin writes in a letter, reflecting back on how he had tried to share the gospel with this notorious heretic, Michael Servetus. And in a letter, he refers back to an event that had taken place 16 years earlier. He writes, 16 years ago, I spared no pains at Paris to gain Servetus to the Lord. It turns out that 16 years before Servetus is put on trial in Geneva, that Servetus had engaged Calvin, had written Calvin a letter. Calvin at this point, 16 years before this point, was known as a Protestant sort of theologian. And just so happens that Calvin at this time, before he went to Geneva, had a price on his head. He was something of a fugitive in Roman Catholic France. But when Servetus sent him a letter, got it to him, and he requested, Servetus did, I would like to meet with you to talk about the deity of Christ. Calvin said, okay. And Calvin risked his life to meet Michael Servetus so that he might win him to Christ. Calvin showed up at great risk to himself in Paris, at the appointed place, at the appointed time, and it turns out Servetus was a no-show. But it illustrates the point that Calvin, even as a very young man, was willing to risk his life that he might win a notorious heretic to the Lord. Well, he is an extraordinary man, an extraordinary pastor. I trust that you've gained a little different perspective about Calvin, the way he lived and the ministry that he had. Extraordinary stuff, it seems to me. Well, that's my first secret agenda, to suggest to you that Calvin, one of the formulators of Reformed theology, was a pastor. And my point to you and my point to my students is that it is part of the Reformed heritage to care about people, to minister to their hearts, because Calvin set an extraordinary example in that regard. But there's a second agenda that I often have. How many of you have ever heard the suggestion that if you believe in Reformed theology, you really can't believe in missions? Anybody ever hear that sort of idea? I've heard that most of my life, that anybody who believes in the sovereignty of God, like Calvin did, has absolutely no interest in winning souls to Christ, and therefore has absolutely no interest in missions. We've heard that, many of us, most of our lives. Well, this idea was represented by one of the great missiologists of the 20th century, a German by the name of Gustav Warneck, wrote a famous work, The History of Protestant Missions. And in this very famous book, this missiologist, this expert on the history of missions, says that the Reformers, not just Calvin, but Luther and all the others, that because of their theology, because of their high view of the sovereignty of God, that the Protestant Reformers, therefore, had no, absolutely no interest in missions. Here's what he says. And I quote Gustav Warneck, "We miss in the Reformers, including Calvin, not only missionary action, but even the idea of missions. And this not only because the newly discovered heathen world across the sea lay almost wholly beyond the range of their vision, but because fundamental theological views hindered them from giving their activity and even their thoughts a missionary direction." Well, that represents a very sort of typical perspective about Calvin and his antipathy, his lack of interest in missionary activity. I'm going to demonstrate to you that Calvin was one of the greatest missionaries the world has ever known. And I'm going to give you some facts that I trust will startle you. Now, this whole story of Calvin's interest in missions depends upon one very important historical fact. It'll surprise no one that in the 16th century, there was a lot of persecution going on, and especially persecution by Catholics against Protestants. And as a result of the fairly intense persecution in various countries, France being one of them, that many people, having embraced the gospel, had to leave their homeland. They had to flee for their lives. They needed a place of refuge, a place they could go and live and survive without persecution. Well, one of the greatest refugee centers of all of Europe in the middle of the 16th century was the city of Geneva. Thousands and thousands of refugees flooded into Geneva, roughly from about 1550 onwards. In fact, statistics indicate that the population of Geneva doubled in a 10-year period. Imagine that. Things got a little crowded. Now, keep that in mind, that Geneva is a refugee center where people are coming from all over Europe seeking asylum, seeking a job, seeking a life. We actually have a letter written by one of those refugees, an Englishman by the name of John Bale. And he describes what Geneva was like in the mid-1550s. He writes, and I quote, "Geneva seems to me to be the wonderful miracle of the whole world. For so many people from all countries come here, as it were, to a sanctuary. Is it not wonderful that Spaniards, Italians, Scots, Englishmen, Frenchmen, Germans, disagreeing in manners and speech and apparel, should live so lovingly and friendly and dwell together like a spiritual congregation?" So Bale demonstrates, we have the documentary evidence, we have the letter, that you have all these refugees from all over the Europe coming to Geneva. Now, the other historical fact that's important to understand is that the majority of those refugees came from France, because Geneva is very close to France and because Geneva was French-speaking. So it made sense that if you were a Protestant being persecuted in France, that one of the logical places you would go would be Geneva. And so hundreds and hundreds, thousands of Frenchmen fled to Geneva, fled for sanctuary. And once they arrived in Geneva, something extraordinary happened. They sat under Calvin's preaching in the great cathedral there in Saint-Pierre. I told you, he preached five times a week, so they got a lot of Calvin there in this cathedral church. And something happened to a good number of those French refugees. Their hearts were stirred for Christ and for their homeland. Many of them, as they sat under Calvin's preaching and teaching, became convinced that they should return to France and preach the gospel. And Calvin wouldn't let them, at least not yet. They went to Calvin, expressing their concern, and Calvin said, "A good missionary is a good theologian." And so he wouldn't send them until he trained them theologically. And so he said, "You want to be a missionary? Come and attend classes, and I will give you and train you in theology." He evaluated and helped them with their preaching style, giving them pointers about how to preach. And then he assessed their moral character. Do they have what it takes spiritually to put their lives at risk in order to become a missionary in France? And once they had passed the exams and passed the moral character questions, then Calvin did everything he could to help them get back to France. And there's one thing he did that I absolutely love, and it really does touch my heart in a deep way. One of the things that Calvin did to these missionaries, he didn't just throw money at them. He didn't just give them training and money and send them off. What Calvin did, and what I would urge you in your churches to do, he maintained an ongoing relationship. These were his brothers. And he would give them ongoing advice. We have scads of letters written by these men sent by Calvin to France writing back to Calvin saying, Dr. Calvin, what do we do next? What advice do you give in this situation? You see, his missionaries were not just pictures on a refrigerator. They were brothers. They were people that he had an ongoing relationship. And if I could urge you, if I could appeal to you, I would say that when you send out missionaries, you need to keep a vibrant relationship going. You need to know what their hearts are. You need to know the pains and the struggles, and your church needs to minister to the missionaries. Give them advice and counsel. Be a real part of their ministry. Because if you do that, you'll be a very good Calvinist. Because that's what Calvin did. I love that. I love it. I fear that many evangelical churches look at missionaries principally as pictures on a refrigerator, not Calvin. Well, I told you there are lots and lots of letters written by these missionaries, sent by Calvin, trained by Calvin, back to France. In 1555 onwards, we start to be able to compile some statistics. And there are a few scholars who have actually done some research on this. I'm going to tell you a couple of facts. The first time I heard these, I couldn't believe it. Here are the facts. We have concrete, conclusive evidence that by 1555, we know that Calvin and Geneva had planted 5 Protestant churches in France. We have the letters written back from the missionaries in France. 1555, 5 planted churches. By 1559, 4 years later, we have concrete, compelling evidence that 100 churches had been planted in total in France. But that's nothing. By 1562, secular scholars have uncovered evidence that Geneva and some of her sister cities had planted over 2,000 churches in France. Don't tell me Calvin didn't care about missions. I have never heard of any denomination planting over 2,000 churches in a 7-year period. Have you? It is one of the most astonishing but little-known facts in the Reformation that Calvin was one of the leading church planters. He trained them, he counseled them, he advised them, he was intimately involved in every phase of the church planting process. Scholars estimate that as a result, principally of Calvin's activities, that by 1565 there were some 3 million Protestants in France. The truth of the matter is that France came that close to becoming a Protestant country. You ever hear the Huguenots? Well, they come from the church planting activity, principally of John Calvin. Don't tell me that John Calvin didn't care about missions and evangelism, because the facts simply do not support the case. When I was at Oxford, I had a dear friend, a Brit. And he was working on a doctorate. His name was Peter Wilcox. He was an Anglican priest. And he had become enamored of Calvin. And he had decided to write a doctoral dissertation on Calvin and missions. And he and I used to get together and drink strong English tea and talk about whatever insights I had about Calvin with his research. And it was a great time. And one time he said to me, he said, and this is the early part of his research, he said, you know, I can find nothing in the academic research material about Calvin and Geneva and the missionary activity. So there's very, very little. As a result of his not being able to find anything out there, he finally had to decide to actually go to Geneva and go to the archives and discover and find some material that has not been looked at for over 400 years. And in the course of his research, he's made some of the most astonishing discoveries. The stuff I'm about to tell you are not in the textbooks. It's in deep hidden in a doctoral dissertation in the Bodleian Library at Oxford University. And much of what I'm going to say now comes from my good friend Pete Wilcox, from the research that he did in the archives in Geneva. Pete concluded in his doctoral dissertation that the last 10 years of Calvin's life, 1554 to 1564, he said that the overriding preoccupation of Calvin's life during those last 10 years was missions. It wasn't just something he did on the side, said Pete. It was something that consumed his attention for the last 10 years of his life. Well, if it doesn't surprise you that 2,000 churches were planted in a 7-year period, principally by the Genevan missionaries, I've got some stuff here that is extraordinary. Again, I told you there were letters written back to Calvin. And Pete had discovered some letters that had never been read before, at least not since the 16th century. He found a number of letters. One comes from the French region of Bergerac. I think it's a city. And this Genevan-trained missionary is now writing back to Calvin, telling Calvin what God has done in this French area. Listen to this letter from the French missionary. There is, he says, by the grace of God, such a movement in our region that the devil is already driven out for the most part, and we're able now to provide ministers for ourselves. Which explains, by the way, why so many churches could be planted, because some of the churches were able to provide ministers for other church plants. He goes on, from day to day we are growing, and God has caused His work to bear such fruit that at sermons on Sundays there are between 4,000 and 5,000 people at worship. Calvin didn't just plant little churches. He planted mega churches. 4,000 to 5,000 souls. Another letter from Montpellier, written by one of the Genevan-trained missionaries back to Calvin. He writes, our church, thanks be to the Lord, has so grown and so continues to grow every day that we are obliged to preach 3 sermons on Sundays to a total of 5,000 to 6,000 people. Another letter from Toulouse, a missionary trained by Calvin, writes back to Calvin, and he says, and I quote, our church has grown to the astonishing number of about 8,000 or 9,000 souls. Don't tell me that Calvin had no concern for missions. He was extraordinarily involved in the planting and the council of missionaries. And they were successful beyond our wildest imaginations. The French government became so angry with Geneva for sending these missionaries and converting so many thousands of people. They sent actually a letter of protest to the city council in Geneva, at which point the city council replied to the French government, "What missionaries?" They'd never want to admit, because France, of course, was a much larger country. And so they denied that they had been so involved. And again, this explains why the research has just not really been out there about the extent of Calvin's involvement and the success of Calvin's involvement. We know that France was not the only area of where Calvin sent missionaries. We have documentary evidence. They sent missionaries to Italy, to the Netherlands, to Hungary, to Poland, to the free imperial city-states in the Rhineland. So Calvin wasn't confined just to France. He sent missionaries all over Europe. Now you may be thinking to yourself, well, he just sent missionaries in his own backyard. And you're not really missions-minded if you don't do foreign missions. That's what you're thinking. I know you people. Right? What about foreign missions? Did Calvin do anything with regard to foreign missions? Boy, have I got a story for you. It turns out, we have documentary evidence that Calvin was involved in planting a church in Brazil, South America. Is that foreign enough for you? It's a wonderful story. Things are in France again. There are lots of persecution going on. And one of the leading Huguenot leaders in France, a man by the name of Coligny, he was a nobleman, a wealthy nobleman. And he began thinking to himself, we French Protestants are undergoing an awful lot of persecution here in France. And he was mindful that the New World had been discovered. And he thought to himself, wouldn't it be great if we established a French colony for Protestants in the New World. And he had the money to put it into action. And Coligny went to Calvin and he said, Calvin, do you have any missionaries who want to go to Brazil? I don't think he called it Brazil at the time. He called it the New World. We actually have the names, plural, of the two men that Calvin trained and sent to Brazil as missionaries. Their names were Pierre Richier and William Chartier, two missionaries trained by Calvin in Geneva for foreign missions in Brazil. Now, the story has a sad ending, actually, because the sea captain, the leader of this group of ships that took artisans and other people needed to establish a colony all along with these two missionaries, once they arrived in what is now Rio de Janeiro, if you're going to plant a church, you might as well plant it in Rio, right? Well, the leader of the expedition, was a man named Villegagnon. And it turns out that upon arrival in Rio, that he decided he'd rather establish his own little fiefdom. He wasn't really interested in missions. He was interested in creating his own territory over which he would then rule. And so he betrayed Coligny and Calvin, and he turned upon the Protestants and murdered a number of them. The rest fled into the Brazilian jungle, where they found refuge with a tribe of cannibals. Fortunately, they had eaten recently. And this tribe of cannibals, provided food and refuge to these French Protestants. And the extraordinary thing, and this is sort of the point, is that not only the trained missionaries sent by Calvin, but many of the Protestant artisans attempted to share the gospel with the cannibals. Now, it turns out that they didn't know the language, and it proved ultimately unsuccessful. But there was a concern, a desire to try. One of the men who eventually made his way back to France wrote a book, published in France, detailing the efforts of the French missionaries and their efforts to win the natives to Christ.